You are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a few new episodes of original programming.
Welcome to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. I am your host, Dustin Rogers, and today on the program, Naoki Kodaka, the maestro behind some of the most beloved games on the Nintendo Entertainment System, and by far the most prolific composer to ever grace the halls of Sunsoft. His music is still widely recognized for its ingenious use of the deceivingly powerful NES sound chip. On today's show, I'll tell you what makes Kodaka's music so good, and about the supporting cast that helped make it happen. It's another episode of Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. That was an arrangement of the title track from Journey to Silius, created for a Sunsoft retrospective album in 2011. The game itself was released in 1990 by Sunsoft, and it featured a soundtrack composed by none other than Naoki Kodaka, who had become the most successful and enduring composer working at the company at this time. And I say this because Journey to Silius was something like the 25th game that Kodaka contributed to at Sunsoft, and it really shows. At this point, he'd spent the better part of 5 years working with the sound team at the company, and mostly on the Nintendo Entertainment System. They'd discover or build upon new techniques together, and they'd find ways to maximize the NES sound, to use it to its fullest, much more so than many of the other composers from this era. Yes, many of Kodaka's soundtracks are so fondly remembered today that their signature sound has been dubbed Sunsoft Bass, referring to the slap bass samples that were often used. There's just something about this approach that brings the NES sound chip to life. I'll tell you what I think it is, but first, let's hear a few songs from Kodaka that really put this famous Sunsoft Bass front and center for you. You're listening to Square Wave on CKW 95.9 FM. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. We just heard four tracks from across a selection of Sunsoft games, all composed by Naoki Kodaka, all of which make great use of that famous Sunsoft bass technique that I alluded to in the previous segment. And what is that exactly? Why is it that Sunsoft games have garnered this reputation for being some of the best music on the NES? Well, to understand it, first you have to know a little bit more about how the Nintendo Entertainment System sound chip works. I really want to begin with this more technical lesson today because I feel like it really enriches the appreciation of the music on the show today and how it sets itself apart from a lot of what was going on at other sound production teams at the time. So the NES sound chip, which is called the Audio Processor Unit or the APU, is a Ricoh 2A03 8-bit microprocessor. It has five voice channels, two square waves, a triangle wave, a noise generator, and a delta modulation channel, or a DMC, which offers sample-based playback. Most early games on the NES only used the first four channels, but as memory expansions began to become more widely available, composers found that they could rely on the DMC to enrich the oral experience. Kodaka and the team at Sunsoft were early pioneers of this, and starting around 1988, much of the music that they created uses this DMC to great effect. So let's take a look at what Sunsoft bass really is and what it allows the composer to do by breaking down a song into separate tracks and examine each piece to see what's really going on in this composition. To make this happen, I have selected the Journey to Silius title track, which I'm going to play one loop of before we begin to break it down. For those who caught the beginning of the show today, the song I'm going to play was the same one that inspired the arranged version that I used to open the program. So let's hear what it sounded like in-game, and afterward, I'll try to explain why it sounds so good. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. That was one loop from the title theme to Journey to Silius, and what a fantastic track that is. It really sets the tone for the game, and it surely gets my blood pumping. I love it. And now that we've got it fresh in our memory, let's try to examine what each channel that makes up the song sounds like. And I'd like to start the exercise today with looking at the DMC. That's the sample-based playback audio track that's inside the NES. Let's hear what the famous Sunsoft bass sounds like when it's all by itself. For a NES game, this sound is very unusual. Typically, composers on the NES steered away from pitched instruments on the DMC, probably because it was a nightmare to work with. That's right, these samples, not only did they take up more cartridge space, but there was also major hoops that you had to jump through if you wanted your music to sound this good. You see, samples played by the DMC channel can be repitched, but only repitched down. And that means that programmers had to start with the samples that were the highest pitched notes and then pitch those down. But when the samples have their pitch lowered, the playback speed slows down too. So samples that were repitched to the lowest notes came out sounding very distorted. You might be able to hear some of that going on right now. Repitching samples on the DMC also seemed to me to be broken. Each sample can only be repitched down 15 steps below the original, but the steps don't fit the chromatic scale, meaning that you have to make concessions to playback speed if you wanted to play certain notes. So in order to achieve that iconic slap bass that you're hearing right now, Naoki Kadaka and the sound team at Sunsoft used 5 different samples to make their own chromatic scale, giving them much greater control over their music in the process. But the problems with the DMC don't stop there. In fact, repitching was also sort of broken. It caused notes to sometimes come out sharp or flat, sometimes by a little, and sometimes by a lot. It's easy to see why so many other composers chose to use the DMC for drums instead. It's not wrong to do this, of course, but the low-quality drum samples, especially when you have access to as few of them as possible, it certainly introduces its own set of musical trade-offs. Under Sunsoft's method, though, things get really interesting, because you still got to get your bass drums from somewhere. And their solution to this was particularly ingenious. On Journey to Silius and many other Sunsoft games from this period, Naoki Kodaka and crew preferred to use 2 sound channels for their drum sounds. First, the noise channel, which does what it claims to do. It generates low-quality static noise, essentially, but with syncopation, it can mimic the sound of cymbals and snare drums pretty well. This was actually a very common use of the noise channel, so it's not all that remarkable. What truly gives Sunsoft's music from this era its pulse is the use of the triangle, which Kodaka and company turned into a bass drum to really give their songs a big boost. Let's restart this track now. I'm going to drop out the DMC, and we'll turn on just the triangle and the noise channels together in isolation. We'll see how that sounds. When we hear the triangle channel and the noise channel working together here, you can plainly pick up the noise channel providing that dirty snare drum hits, while the triangle channel fills in the lower end, sometimes teaming up with the snare for emphasis when it's required. And this results in drums that sound much more impressive than the noise channel and just a few samples can give you. But it's not easy. It takes time to get this right. And whether they had it or not, I'd say that most soundtracks on the NES opted for a different approach. Okay, that's all you need to hear of that one. That covers the DMC, the noise channel, and the triangle channel. What about the 2 square wave channels? Well, they're both playing the melody on this song, and when we hear them together, they sound like one instrument. But the 2 voices are playing the melody very noticeably different from one another. Let me restart this song again. This time I'm going to drop the drums and the slap bass, and we'll listen to just the first 20 seconds of this track, played on the 2nd square wave channel, and we'll see how it compares to what's happening with the 1st. There you go, just 1 square wave channel in isolation. Notice how thin it feels. You hear the melody, but it's tamer, more simplistic. Okay, now let me play the same section as it's played by the 1st square wave channel, and we'll see if you notice any differences. Right, you see what I mean. It's like the 2 voices here are playing different parts of the same melody on the same instrument. They sound alike, but they're very different. Okay, last part of this now, I want to thank you for sticking with me. The same section, one more time, with both square waves. And after that, I'm going to bring it all together for your musical appreciation. Notice how the offset melody played by the square wave channels creates a reverb harmony, and that's a trick that Kodaka would later use to recreate a finger vibrato effect as well. I'm going to follow this song with a set of other songs from Journey to Silius' incredible score, and as you listen here, see if you can separate the different audio tracks with your ears. See if you notice a few other musical techniques from Kodaka and crew. You're listening to Square Wave on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. That set was from the game Journey to Silius. It was composed by Naoki Kadaka, and it was arranged by Nobuyuki Hara, Naohisa Murata, and Shinichi Seiya. Journey to Silius is a run-and-gun action platformer in the vein of Mega Man. Players assume the role of one Jay McCray, the son of a leading scientist who's out for revenge after his father, the scientist, is killed in a terrorist attack on a space colony. It's a surprisingly dark post-apocalyptic setting for one of Sunsoft's original properties, but it makes sense when you consider that this game started development as a licensed property for the 1984 movie The Terminator. And maybe it's not all that surprising, actually, considering Sunsoft had just released a NES adaptation of Platoon. Yes, that Platoon, in December of 1988, and they were keen to make more movie tie-in games. So keen, in fact, that they unveiled The Terminator at the Las Vegas Winter Consumer Electronics Show in 1989, with marketing materials and, as we'd later learn, set to work on a promo video for the upcoming summer CES show. I don't believe, though, that this video was ever shown. It was finished, and thanks to a feat of archival wonder, the promo clip still exists online today. It's one of these classic ads from the early days of home video game consoles. I felt it was too good to pass up, so I ripped the audio from this never-shown video. Let's take a moment to enjoy this obscure piece of video game history, and I'll be right back on Square Wave on CKOW 95.9 FM.
If a major motion picture was ever made to be a video game, it has to be The Terminator. In fact, when you really look at it, it's a video game of sorts already, with human heroes pitted against a monstrous mechanical enemy, a nail-biting plotline, and a non-stop manic chase through every part of the city. And, of course, the explosive arsenal of video and audio effects that made The Terminator the action hit of the 80s. All that's missing is a way to translate the movie's incredible audiovisual action to the small screen, and a way to control it. Which is exactly what the software pioneers at Sunsoft have done. We're bringing the Terminator back in the biggest way possible. As the very first home video game to feature movie footage and interactive graphics technology. That's right, the same technology that transformed the arcade a few years ago with computer-generated graphics so incredibly realistic, they literally bring games to life. Thanks to the same magic, The Terminator is the most amazingly lifelike home video game you've ever seen. With scenes based largely on actual movie footage and graphics that set a new standard for Nintendo software. And that's not all The Terminator's got. Want constantly moving multiple screens? You got them. Room-rattling sound effects? You got them. In fact, when you add it all up, you'll see that The Terminator has bestseller written all over it. Of course, that's what you've come to expect from Sunsoft. As title after title climb toward the top of the Nintendo charts, when it comes to bringing the best of the arcade home to the Nintendo Entertainment System, Sunsoft knows what it takes to be the title holder. And that goes for a lot more than just the titles themselves, because our marketing effort is every bit as explosive as the games we're offering. Sunsoft packaging is the boldest and brightest on the market today. Sunsoft advertising is designed to hit your video game customers where they live and turn them into buyers. And Sunsoft products, from bona fide arcade hits like Spy Hunter and Xenophobe, to hit movie adaptations like Platoon and The Terminator, give us one of the most powerful, fastest-growing libraries in the Nintendo software universe. So don't wait. Put the record-breaking popularity and breakthrough motion picture graphics of The Terminator to work for you today. And keep watching for more of the biggest and best new titles in home video game software from, who else? Sunsoft, the title holder.
What a spot, eh? It's such a shame that it was never shown, because after Sunsoft unveiled their version of The Terminator, the Creative Licensing Corporation, they're the company that has originally sold the rights to the action franchise to Sunsoft, instead withdrew them because the game didn't follow the story of the movie. Now, we'll never know how different the Terminator was from the original script, but it's pretty clear that it was meant to be set after the Skynet-induced apocalypse that we see in the films. Now, I'm a bigger fan of Terminator 2, and my memory is a little foggy, but correct me if I'm wrong, none of this actually happens in the Terminator, the first movie, so it's easy to see why the CLC revoked their license. It was a tough moment for the Sunsoft team, no doubt, but they decided to rework the Terminator game into something original so that they could salvage something for their time invested. This rework resulted in the game Journey to Silius that we know today, the same game we're playing the soundtrack of today, and it would finally release in the back half of 1990. Before we move on from this title and the fantastic music Naoki Kodaka wrote for it, let's hear a few other standout songs that are on this soundtrack. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKW 95.9 FM. A few more songs there from the game Journey to Silius, which released for the Nintendo Entertainment System way back in the year 1990. It was created by the team at Sunsoft in Japan, and the soundtrack was composed by none other than Naoki Kodaka. Before the break, I mentioned that Journey to Silius began development as a licensed title, and although this would never come to pass, this was really the start of Sunsoft's big push into licensed games. Now, I'm already running out of time on the show today, but there are two other licensed titles by Sunsoft from this period that feature Kodaka on compositional duties that I wanted to cover. The first is Fester's Quest, and this was also the first game to use the programming trick that would later give us the iconic Sunsoft-based sound that I spent so much time on earlier in the program. Only this game, Fester's Quest, used different instrumentation for its samples. The other game I want to play for you is Gremlins 2, The New Batch, which released just over a year after Fester's Quest, and it shows how quickly the techniques used by Naoki Kodaka and the sound programming staff at Sunsoft were evolving. This set begins with Kodaka's island-inspired take on Vic Mizzy's The Addams Family theme, and then we'll get two more tracks from Fester's Quest. We'll finish the show today with three from Gremlins 2, released from the Nintendo Entertainment System on December 14th, 1990. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. We'll be right back. thank you for listening to today's episode of Square Wave. I didn't get to cover everything that I'd hoped to on the show today, but sometimes there's more music and info than I can fit into 1 hour. The good news is, hopefully this means that I can come back to Naoki Kodaka, and there's certainly more to talk about when it comes to Sunsoft. I hope you enjoyed the breakdown of the Journey to Silius title theme, and remember, if you missed something, Square Wave is available to stream anytime, right from your phone, on Spotify and many other popular podcast networks. This show is written and hosted by me, Dustin Rogers. The show's theme was composed by Spaceman Fantastiques. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned for Pages and many other great community radio programs right here on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
And it's coming up to 5 o'clock.
Radio that's passionate, genuine, and personal. CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
Your friends on the radio. CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.